We invited Gina Raimondo to take part in this discussion, but she declined our invitation. Let's go straight to opening statements. Matt Brown, why are you the best choice for governor?
Well, I believe that the system we have isn't working for people. The costs of things people need, health care, housing, education for their kids, have gone through the roof. And wages have stayed the same. And that means that life is getting harder for people, and it continues to get harder for people. And the problem is that government isn't even doing anything about it, because government is working for Wall Street and for corporations. Why? Because that's where politicians get their campaign contributions. I think Governor Raimondo is very much a part of this system and has taken it to an extreme. And I think we need a change here in Rhode Island. I've spent my whole life running public service organizations dedicated to solving real problems, getting results, and improving people's lives. From City Year 25 years ago, which I co-founded and led in Rhode Island, where we tutored thousands of kids in the schools, and that's served as the model for AmeriCorps all across the country, to serving as Secretary of State, where I took on corporate lobbying and brought more transparency and accountability to our state government, to co-founding and leading Global Zero, an international nonprofit organization that works to reduce nuclear arms and was twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. So I've spent my whole life working to improve things for people, and that's what I'll do as governor.
Spencer Dickinson, give us your opening statement.
So why I should be governor, why I'm the best choice. I've lived it. My two opponents, neither one of them has spent 1 minute in the legislature. The problems we have today are very closely related to the legislature and how decisions are made in this state. We have two serious components there. One of them is the governor and her problem, number one being she doesn't care. She's not here. She's out of town. She's not acting as a functioning administrator. And the other problem on her that she brings, I believe, is that it's more than she's just not there. She never did the apprenticeship. She doesn't have the skills necessary to deal with these issues. She never worked as a systems analyst at Prudential Insurance or Citizens Bank in Providence. So when she goes down to look at the problem, she doesn't know what she's looking at. And I think that's something that's really important. You have to bring something. I've served in the Army. I've had my own business. As I said, I've worked for a couple of big companies. And I've served 12 years in the legislature. And, you know, with all due respect to my other opponent, Matt Brown, he doesn't bring that apprenticeship either. And when I look back at my long life in politics and in business and in public service, in effect, of being in the Army, when I see that and I look back at it, I say that is the ideal preparation for what I'm proposing to do. And this is a job interview. I'm asking you, the voter, to put me to work to solve a lot of problems. And maybe we'll bring out what some of those problems are during this discussion.
We sure will. Matt Brown, you've used some lofty rhetoric during your campaign. You call this a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party in Rhode Island. But you got into this race less than 6 months ago. If you are so concerned about the direction of Rhode Island, why didn't you start your campaign for governor last year, giving you a longer runway to build support?
Well, I've been working in Rhode Island my whole life, ever since I was a kid. My mother was a civil rights activist and a social justice activist. And
sure, but the point is, you came back to Rhode Island from Washington, D.C. in 2012, and you kept a very low profile after coming back here. You did not emerge publicly until March, when you said you were thinking about running for governor. You're talking about all these issues now. If you care so much about these issues, why did you wait until less than 6 months ago to start your campaign?
Well, I've been working on these issues my whole life, and I was working on them right up until getting to this campaign with Global Zero, the organization that I led and co-founded, which is a nonprofit international organization that works to make the world safer, works to reduce nuclear arms, protect all of us, especially our children, all around the country and around the world from the threat of nuclear weapons. So that's what I was doing for the last number of years. I'm running now because I think the problems are urgent. I think they are getting worse, not better. When we look at the extreme concentration of wealth, when we look at environmental degradation, when we look at the corruption of our democracy by money, these problems are getting worse and they're not being solved. And so that's why I've gotten into the race.
Spencer Dickinson, a number of reporters, including myself, did not get any advance notice when you staged a recent State House news conference to talk about your campaign. If you can't get the word out to reporters other than Catherine Gregg at the Providence Journal, what does that say about your potential effectiveness as governor?
Okay, criticism well aimed and well taken. By the way, Friday at 1 o'clock, I will have a press conference on the Smith Street side of the State House, and I will address the issue of what the governor needs to do in being proactive in dealing with the Providence bankruptcy issue.
Matt Brown, one of your proposals is to create a single-payer healthcare system in Rhode Island. The state of Vermont looked at this, decided it was not feasible to do so. If it can't be done in Vermont, why can it happen in Rhode Island?
Well, first of all, Ian, we know that the system we have now isn't working. If we want to talk about what's realistic, the system we have now is totally unrealistic. The costs have gone up 5% a year for 40 years. 40,000 people in the state don't have health insurance. Many others who have health insurance still can't afford to go to a doctor. So we know this system isn't working. We also know from our own example in this country of Medicare, which is the most popular health care program in the country, of more than 50 million people are a part of it, and from other countries, what the solution is. The solution is to get a larger pool of people together into the same insurance program, single payer, so that we have more power to reduce the costs of healthcare, medicines, and procedures, more bargaining power, and to lower the administrative costs. Medicare's administrative costs are 2% versus 15% in the health insurance industry. So this would save money overall, $1,500 on average per person.
Spencer Dickinson, is it realistic to think that a small state like Rhode Island can implement a single-payer healthcare system?
Well, nobody knows that, but I think it's worth a try, and it's something we have to do. If you think what's the world going to be like in 10 years or 50 years? We'll have universal healthcare because what we have now costs too much. It's a 25% to 30% excess cost on the cost of healthcare for individuals and families. How do we get there? Very difficult. We have an entrenched system that involves insurance companies, pharma, hospitals, how they operate, even the doctors, medical profession, there's going to be some resistance. And I'm going to say that it's something that's worth looking into. It's worth trying to do. And my administration will use its resources, including the insurance commissioner's office and anything else we've got. And we're going to try to find a road to get us there. It's not going to be easy.
Spencer Dickinson, public schools here in Rhode Island have made very negligible progress over the last 20 or so years. What would your plan be for improving public education in Rhode Island?
Well, some very specific things, and something that I'd like to see started. I proposed it needs real serious evaluation. I would like to see a consolidated laboratory district, including Providence, Pawtucket, and Central Falls. And we are dealing with the at-risk kids and English language learners where we are getting our very bad results. There are a couple of things that I'd like to see happen. One of them is the Oklahoma plan, and the other one you probably are familiar with the concept of the Finnish education reform. In the Oklahoma plan, what they did is, I think sometime in the 90s, they had an opportunity based on their budget that they could start school at age 4 with fully qualified teachers. They got results from that in Oklahoma. Essentially, we have at-risk kids in those three cities, Providence, Pawtucket, and Central Falls. We call it a laboratory, or we'll find a better name for it, but it is an experiment. If it works, we can try it in the whole rest of the state, but it's going to cost some money, and I think we have to step up to the plate and deal with that. We are getting, I think it's statistically, we have the worst result in English language learners or Spanish-speaking students in Rhode Island.
Let me stop you there. Matt Brown, as Spencer Dickinson says, Rhode Island does spend a lot of money on public education already with not very good results in many cases. What would your approach be for trying to do better?
Well, the cities and towns spend a lot of money for the kids, but at the state level, the funding is low. And the problem is that about 20 years ago, Ian, our state, like many states across the country, bought into what we know is a failed theory of economics, trickle-down economics. And the state, our state government started giving one tax break after another to large corporations and the wealthiest 1%. And that has continued, of course, under Governor Raimondo, whose primary agenda is big corporate tax breaks. Well, what happened when that money all shifted to corporations and the wealthiest 1%? The kids didn't disappear. They still needed to be educated. The cities and towns were compelled to raise property taxes. That hits the middle class harder. And there just hasn't been enough funding for the schools. So that's why we have school buildings that are falling down around our kids. And we can't ever start to feel like that's normal. That's really beyond the pale that we have school buildings falling down around the kids. But what's also important is what's happening in the school buildings. We're not providing a good quality education to all of our children. So I would repeal those extreme tax cuts for the big corporations and the wealthiest 1%, that's people making over $500,000, and invest in our schools so we can shrink the class sizes, support our teachers, and give a good education to all of our kids.
Would that be prudent to impose more taxes on businesses in a state that is often criticized for having a hostile business climate?
Well, let's be clear about where we are. I mean, we've got to tell the truth here about the situation we're in. That is a story that has been told, this theory of trickle-down economics, for a long time. The truth is that there have been so many special tax breaks for corporations and for the wealthiest 1%. And keep in mind, these corporations get breaks from the federal government. They can move their labor overseas for cheap labor. They stash their money overseas. They don't pay tax. So that's the reality. So we're in a situation now where middle-class people in this state are paying a higher tax rate than the wealthy. That's the truth. So they need to pay their fair share. I would like to, for one thing, have a fair business tax where the large corporations who've gotten all the breaks pay their fair share. They pay a little more, and we cut taxes for our small businesses, which is where so many of the jobs are.
We should also note that Governor Raimondo has supported a series of workforce training programs. Let's move on and talk about UHIP, the state's system for implementing human service benefits. It's been very costly, even though the federal government is picking up a lot of the tab and plagued by problems. Matt Brown, if you became governor and took office next January, what would your approach be for trying to resolve problems with UHIP?
Well, the first day, I would go out and meet with the frontline workers. These are the people who are delivering the services to the recipients, their health care and their food services and so on, child care services, and learn from them what is happening here, what is it like every day, what are the challenges, and what do we need to do to fix this system. I would also talk to the recipients themselves, the people who've been so hurt by this problem. And we got to remember how we ended up here. It didn't have to be this way. Governor Raimondo was warned by the federal government and by the state inspector general that the UHIP system was not ready to launch, and she launched it anyway. And at the same time, she cut 40 staff who had experience, and the system broke, and it continues to be broken. And we need to understand what the real results of that are. Tens of thousands of families went hungry and without health care. The bill is now, as you say, up to $650 million.
Spencer Dickinson, what would your approach be for trying to resolve problems with UHIP?
I did mention that I had worked as a systems analyst at Prudential and Citizens Bank. I think that you need to have some of those skills because you don't do the work. You don't redesign the system. You don't rewrite the flowcharts. But you have to know what you're looking at, and you have to care. And there's no question that there's a problem. I'm not sure what the real answer is, but I have said this almost every time I've been on the air. There's an organization called SEI. Systems Engineering Institute. It is located at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Their job is to evaluate federal and state systems. And I've said this to Gina Raimondo on the air. Call them now. Don't wait until January 3rd when I'm governor. Call them now. Bring them down here and get an evaluation. Maybe we need to start over.
Spencer Dickinson, is state spending in Rhode Island too high?
Yes.
Where specifically would you cut?
You know, you have to. I know enough about this. I've been on the finance committee for 3 years, you know, some time ago, but I know that process. And one of the things I know is that the numbers are going to fool you. You have to look at every detail and understand it completely. So somebody says, well, if you propose this program, where's the money coming from? Well, the answer is that we wasted $80 million on a very fancy rotary in Appanog, which makes me crazy. We've wasted $650 million on UHIP. A lot of that money is federal money, but we do have a delegation of four senators and congressmen, and they can redirect some of that money. That money can go anywhere we want it to go if we're sure we know what we're doing.
Matt Brown, is state spending in Rhode Island too high?
Well, there's a lot of waste. I mean, if you look back to when Governor Raimondo was treasurer and she made drastic cuts that were unnecessary to the pension system, which hurt a lot of workers and continue to hurt workers here across the state and retirees. She then took the pension and invested it in high-risk hedge funds, which then proceeded to lose $500 million compared to just a regular index fund. And we the state, had to pay $214 million in fees to those hedge fund managers. So that lost the state almost $750 million.
Are you not engaging in a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking by criticizing that strategy? Because there were a lot of people who at that time in the aftermath of the recession thought hedge funds were a way to cushion investments from losses.
Well, I guess it depends which experts you listen to. And ultimately, as the person in charge, you need to have the judgment to make the right decision. There were also a lot of people, including the most famous American investor of all time, Warren Buffett, who went around the country and warned treasurers like Gina Raimondo at the time to not go down this fad rabbit hole of investing in hedge funds.
Spencer Dickinson. Spencer, why would you be a stronger candidate than Governor Raimondo in taking on Alan Fung, Patricia Morgan, or whoever is the Republican gubernatorial candidate this November?
Well, that's a very good question. And by the way, I just want to say, I think in this segment, I hope that maybe I can help to differentiate myself from Matt Brown. A lot of what we say sounds the same, but from my point of view, there is a big difference, and I hope you allow me to address some of those issues. Why would I be better than Gina Raimondo at, say, confronting Alan Fung or some other candidate? For one thing, if I survive the primary, I have a lot of friends that will come to my side. All of labor, I know the people. I know all of labor. I know Democrats, and I've had relationships with them for many years. They know me, and I think they trust me. So there, I don't think there's going to be any problem. There will be no problem between me and the establishment, which now, because of the realities of politics, you know, they can't go against an existing governor with $7 million. That doesn't mean that they can't have a coffee with me last week or last month and tell me what they really think.
Let me hold you there. Matt Brown, we've seen that Governor Raimondo can beat Alan Fung. She did that in 2014. Why would you be a stronger Democrat to take on whomever the Republican nominee is in November?
Well, she got in with 41% of the vote. Let's not forget, she didn't have a majority. And here we are in a Democratic-leaning state, one of the most Democratic in the countries, states in the country, with a Democratic incumbent, and still a large majority of people, as you know, are looking for a different candidate with a different vision. And the reason is that people know, all people of all backgrounds, middle-class people, working-class people, agree that the system we have isn't working for them. They feel it every day in their lives. They're struggling to get by, and they see the large corporations and the wealthiest getting richer and richer at the same time. So they know the system isn't working. They know the government's not working for them. I've spent my whole life starting and running organizations to take on these kinds of challenges, to change things for the people, to lift up our communities, to help our young people, to make the world safer. And people are looking for a change. So so I'm going to bring that experience to it, and also an agenda that gets us from where we are to where everybody knows we need to be, a state where everyone can afford to go to the doctor, where all of our kids can get a quality education, where everybody has a job that pays enough to make a life for themselves and for their children in this state, where everybody can afford housing. These are the problems that we need to solve, and I've put out detailed ideas and serious plans to solve them.
Spencer Dickinson, as we just heard, Matt Brown has a laundry list of policy proposals. Every year, Rodan faces usually a three-figure deficit at the start of the legislative year. Is he overpromising what he can do?
Well, my criticism of my opponent, Matt Brown, is that he is very good at expressing the problem. And I'll draw an analogy. Somebody said, I think it was Gene Valicenti, that said what the state needs is a mechanic, you know, not a policy wonk. And I won't claim that I've never had some good ideas. I've had some good ideas. But, you know, I kind of picture you pulling into the service station with your vehicle and it right then stops and it won't run. And somebody comes out and looks at it and says, hey, your car won't run. And you say, well, yeah. And the guy says, yeah, your car won't run. And you say, well, can you fix it? And he says, your car won't run. Now, that's what I'm hearing from Matt Brown. I'm also finding out, as I'm sitting in that service station, the guy doesn't know how to fix it. Not only that, he doesn't have a toolbox. So what I bring to this is years of experience serving in various committees in the legislature. I know the people. I know the problems. I know the agencies. And I'm hearing ideas, but I don't hear a single suggestion of how to actually do it. And, you know, as a voter, again, I'm looking at my opponent here. I don't think I see somebody who is the mechanic that can even begin to deal with these problems.
Matt Brown, I'd like to hear your rebuttal, but I also like to add this question to it. Your policy ideas, many of them are well to the left of the legislative leadership in Rhode Island. If you became governor, how would you get your priorities through the legislature?
Look, I'm not somebody who likes to just talk about things. I'm somebody who my whole life has done things and gotten results. So from city year, which we started from the start here in Rhode Island 25 years ago, that is still going strong 25 years later, that has grown to 28 cities across the country, that has served as the model for AmeriCorps, which has now engaged a million young Americans in serving their country. That's real results, solving real problems that matter to people. I was Secretary of State. I pushed a lot of legislation through the legislature then, and we took on corporate lobbying and made the government more transparent and accountable. I started an international organization called Global Zero that worked to bring countries together who are in conflict to reduce nuclear arms. We pushed effectively for a number of treaties and were nominated twice for the Nobel Prize. So I know how to get results. And to your question, Ian, I've spent my whole life through all of those initiatives that I just mentioned working to get governments to do things and getting legislatures to do things. So it's not easy, but you just bring all the tools of leadership to that job. You bring serious ideas with the backing of good experts and validation. And all of my ideas have that we put forward in this campaign. They all explain how we're going to get from here to there. Secondly, you bring persuasion. Third, you bring public support. You've got to build public support if you want to get your legislative proposals through. And finally, of course, when and if necessary, you bring pressure. And so I'll bring all of those tools of leadership to getting the changes that we need and the support we need to get them through.
I'd like to do a lightning round of some shorter answers. Matt Brown, do you support the proposal for the Fane Tower high-rise near downtown Providence? Why or why not?
Not as it stands. I think we need a more comprehensive approach. We need to as citizens and as a community, and certainly our leaders, need to really map out what we want to do with this space, what we want it to be, not just for today and not just put it out to the highest bidder, but what do we want this public space to be and look like for ourselves, for our children, for the future.
Same question to you, Spencer Dickinson. Yes or no on the Fane Tower, and why or why not?
I think we could do a lot better. I think the governor should sit down with Fane and maybe propose some alternatives.
Spencer Dickinson, would you support a expansion of charter schools in Rhode Island?
I think we should be looking the other direction. I think maybe what we need to do, I was starting to tell you about my thoughts for education in Providence, and I know this is a lightning round question, but I think that one of the things we need to do, we need to look very hard at this question, but we ought to consider whether we ought to bring the charter schools back into the fold, and that might be part of what I would propose in the Consolidated Laboratory School District.
Matt Brown, would you support an expansion of charter schools?
Not with the current funding formula. You know, Ian, that a number of decades ago when charter schools got started, the whole idea was that there were going to be models that could be a little bit more innovative and independent, and then the public school districts could absorb and adopt some of those principles. But what's happened is that we've ended up in a situation where the charter schools are competing for funds with our public schools and draining funds out of that system, which is already underfunded. So we're going to have to do something different.
Matt Brown, you did a podcast last week where you attributed Governor Raimondo's initial support for the Burrillville power plant to a contribution she got from an executive with that company. You, in your earlier political life, got a lot of $1,500 contributions. Did you ever take a policy stance for or against something because of that small of a contribution?
Well, no. Ian, it wasn't just the contribution she took from the executive. You know how this system works, Ian, with these contribution caps. People find a way around it. It's called bundling. People go out and collect checks from their lawyers and their associates and so on. And so it's a lot of money. She's also got a contribution as an independent expenditure from somebody runs an oil company, Stacey Schusterman, who's funding an independent expenditure for her in this campaign. So that's a lot of money. And there's no doubt, I don't think anyone in Rhode Island has any doubt that the millions of dollars that politicians raise, like Governor Raimondo, from Wall Street and from large corporations and all these interests, that those companies are not doing that for a reason. They're doing it because they're getting influence from their government, including from Governor Raimondo. So it's part of the system that needs to be fixed. That's why I don't take any corporate PAC, corporate lobbyist money, or fossil fuel money and put out a proposal to ban all lobbyist contributions, ban all contributions from executives of companies that get any kind of special benefits from the state.
Spencer Dickinson, it's widely acknowledged that Rhode Island suffers from a lack of affordable housing. What would you do to address that?
I think we're going to have a conversation. I think what our problem is today is that our cities and towns outside of Providence and the metropolitan area, they don't want people. They don't want more people. They are, and they wake up some morning, the town manager thinks he's smart because everybody in the development has to be 58 years or older, and you can't buy a lot for under $200,000. And he wakes up one day and the school is half full. This is not a formula for success. But we're going to have a serious conversation statewide and admit what are our real goals. Are we trying to keep people from moving from Providence to the outlying towns? Is that our goal? As a builder, I can tell you that your land cost has to be about one-third of the product cost. If you have a $30,000 lot, you can sell a $100,000 house. There are plenty of people who'd love to have one. There's no such thing. And I think we need to find a way to arrive there. It's going to have to be a very long, serious, thoughtful discussion between the cities and towns and the city of Providence.
Matt Brown, what would your approach be for increasing the supply of affordable housing in Rhode Island?
Yeah, we have an affordable housing crisis here. We're one of the worst in the country. We've got a whole lot of people who can't afford a house anywhere in the state, either to buy or to rent. And the root of the problem is that there's not enough housing. So one thing we need to do is do more to develop a housing that's been abandoned or that needs to be renovated. But secondly, we just simply need to have more houses built. And we need to be building three times the number of houses every year that we're doing now. So I've proposed that we change some of the rules and get rid of some of the red tape that makes it so hard for builders to build the affordable housing that we need. We're one of the last states in the country in terms of the number of new houses built every year. So my proposal would unlock a construction boom by builders of housing, including houses that middle class and working class people can afford. This would solve the affordable housing crisis. It would also create 9,000 jobs per year over the next 10 years.
Matt Brown, in 2006, you cut short your run for U.S. Senate. That was after a controversy involving campaign fundraising. The Federal Elections Commission ultimately found that you did not violate campaign finance law. But this was a serious situation that effectively led to the end of your campaign. What does that tell us about you?
Well, as you said, Ian, these attacks were brought by me during the campaign by the Republican Party. That happens in politics. That's part of what goes on. The FEC dismissed it as having, quote, no basis at all. And so and then I went on to found a nonprofit organization, Global Zero, as we've talked about. So that campaign was not successful. That's entirely my responsibility. But I've run for the last 25 years very successful organizations in public service that have made a great difference in people's lives, from City Year through serving as Secretary of State to serving as Global Zero, co-founding Global Zero. And that's the experience that I will bring to the governor's office to take on real problems and get real results that makes people's lives better.
Spencer Dickinson, what do you have to say about Matt Brown's aborted 2006 U.S. Senate run?
Well, when he left here in 2000, or when he left the campaign in 2006, it was clear in my mind and the mind of many other people that this was a guy that didn't play by the same rules that I play by and that I would like other people to play by. And I don't know, he's going to deny it, and we're not able to prove anything right here today. But here's what I do know. Somebody engineered a very elaborate plan to launder campaign financing, campaign money, campaign contributions. And there's no question that all this happened. If somebody wants to sue me, we'll get some lawyers and we'll take depositions. You don't give money to somebody in Hawaii because if you're in Rhode Island or New York, unless you've been asked to do it and unless it's part of a plan. You don't resign if you're the chair of the main state party a day after this comes out if there's nothing there.
We've got it. Brief rebuttal, Matt Brown.
Yeah, these are false attacks. They were false when the Republican Party brought them in 2006. The FEC dismissed it as being false and having no basis. Look, Governor Raimondo picked this up again. She went back a dozen years to find something. And she has raised millions of dollars from Wall Street and corporations to run false negative attacks against me. And this is an attempt to fool the voters with false information. Because she's trying to distract from her record of fiscal problems in this state, from UHIP that's got a bill of $650 million to the pension investments that cost another $715 million to the 195 construction debacle to cooler and warmer, and the attempt to use outside money, millions of dollars, to promulgate things that are not true to the public is just a distraction. And we ought to stick to the issues. And I would be happy to debate her anytime about any of these questions. But I want to stay on the issues as we get into the final days of this campaign, the problems that people are facing and our solutions for them.
That's it for our debate with the Democratic candidates for governor in Rhode Island. I'd like to thank Matt Brown and Spencer Dickinson for joining us. We invited Governor Raimondo to join us, but she declined our invitation to take part. I'm Ian Donis. Thank you for listening.